This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Well, Lamar Jackson officially slammed the door on the question of who is the MVP in the NFL this year. He may also have slammed the door on my chances to win $15,000 in the battle with Todd Furman fantasy football-wise. I'm even nervous to hit refresh here on the scoreboard to see how many points that he put up, and it's not good. Almost 50 points. 49.2. So much for everybody in the everybody on the show who was hoping for a big Christmas bonus thanks to this fantasy football run. It ain't going to be that good.
Wait a second. Are you telling me there's no chance Ryan Tannehill will throw six touchdown passes?
I don't feel good about Ryan Tannehill or Jimmy G or Philip Rivers, who are the three guys that I have to try to match this. I'm not sure that the three of them combined will put up 49.2 points. So unless Todd Furman's rest of his team basically all simultaneously tear their ACLs, I think that there is a very little chance that I'm going to win this thing. This is maybe epic beatdown status that we are headed for in this this round. And it may be epic beatdown status that everybody is headed for right now, because there doesn't seem to be an answer right now for Lamar Jackson. I was skeptical that he would be able to keep this run going, but it seems like, much like I was saying that I liked LSU and Clemson in the college football playoff, because it seems to me that they are accelerating down the stretch, you know, like a horse in a breakaway at the Kentucky Derby, or like a race car coming down the stretch of the final run. It seems to me that the Baltimore Raven offense is accelerating as they come into the playoff run. Effectively, they have locked up the number one overall seed now. And I say effectively because they have basically a, at this point, I guess, two-game lead with two to go, right? Because the Patriots have to win this weekend, and then they'll be a game and a half back with two to go. But the Ravens would have to lose each of their last two now, and the Patriots would have to win out in order for the Patriots to be the overall number one seed. And the Ravens close with a game at Cleveland. And I know for the Brown fans out there, the Cleveland Browns have already beaten the Ravens once. I don't feel good about their odds of beating them again. And then the Ravens finish with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And so if they split those two, worst case scenario, they are the number one seed. If they beat either of those teams, then they are your champions of the AFC in the regular season, and they would be your overall number one seed. And I just, barring an injury to Lamar Jackson, I don't think that anybody is going to figure out this offense this year. Now, I could be wrong. I could be wrong, and we could get a postseason game where things truly go awry for the Ravens. But last night was a clinic, and the Jets, I thought, would put forward a better fight than they did. I was wrong. I thought that Sam Darnold, I told you guys, I think, on the show, that Sam Darnold, I thought, had more at stake than Lamar Jackson did, because Sam Darnold's last time in a primetime game was against the Patriots, and he was totally embarrassed, and he was talking about seeing ghosts. And we knew that Lamar Jackson was having a great season regardless, but he went out and put up an even better game than I think anybody could anticipate. And Sam Darnold sort of reinforced the mediocrity that has been his telltale story of the season so far. And I don't see in particular that changing now this year. He'll enter year three. I don't think Jets fans have a lot of confidence in him. They certainly don't have a lot of confidence in Adam Gase. And it was just an ugly performance by the Jets for the last time on the major stage. It's the last Thursday night football game of the year. And I'm going to miss Thursday night football because it's always fun to come in on Friday and talk about a game that everybody watched. But frankly, I don't think you can say enough about Lamar Jackson, about Mark Ingram, about Greg Roman, the offensive coordinator, John Harbaugh, the head coach, and the team that the Baltimore Ravens have right now, as they have now won 10 straight football games, and I think deserve to be a substantial favorite to be at the Super Bowl down in Miami. and they play an effervescent, fun style of football that I thought was reflected in the post-game interview. These guys genuinely like each other, and this team seems to genuinely like each other, and I think it's hard to watch them and not enjoy watching them. And I believe we have in the part of the post-game interview with Aaron Andrews on Fox last night, this is what Mark Ingram and Lamar Jackson sounded like.
Someone suggested I give you the mic and you ask a question. You want to go ahead?
Freaky L, a.k.a. Action Jackson, a.k.a. Era A Apparel. Listen, my dog. Hey, Juno, hit him. Hey, crank. All right, L. Man, you broke Mike Vick's rushing record, man. You the AFC North champions for the second year in a row. How I feel, man? Tell me how I feel, L. Freaky.
It feel good, but you know, we got a lot of season left to play, and we got two more banners to hang up. And,
so you're telling me the story unwritten?
Unwritten right now.
Book unfinished?
Right.
Congratulations, brother, on breaking Mike Vick's record and being the GOAT, the MVP that you are.
Appreciate it, bro.
Love
you, bro.
Send us
hey, man, Thursday Night Football in America. Back to you in the studio.
Trust.
That was awesome.
All right, so that is the Baltimore Ravens. Let me bring in the crew. Is it fair to say, Danny G, that they should be the overwhelming favorite to win the AFC and maybe to win the Super Bowl at this point?
Not crazy at all. Had them on my top five, bottom five at the very number one spot weeks and weeks ago. And the very next week, you caught up to the rest of us on the show and you put them number one as well. Obviously, the only other team that could maybe come close this season are the 49ers, which is why a lot of people thought that that was a Super Bowl preview a couple weeks back. But yeah, what an amazing performance. We knew it was going to happen. I think what we weren't sure of was how bad that quad was. Turns out it didn't look like it affected him at all. And you saw at the start of the second half, once they got up by 21 points, L Freaky, as he's being called there, Freaky L, was talking to RG3, and it looked like he was going to sit down. Nope. Comes right back in, throws more touchdown passes. Just looked like he was having way too much fun out on the field beating up the Jets to come out of the game. My question to you is, after those weeks and weeks on the air, doubting him and thinking, you know, he puts himself in harm's way too much and this isn't going to last, defenses are going to figure him out.
I still don't believe it's a long term.
So that's what I was going to ask you, because Doug Gottlieb, who does afternoons here on the network, he kind of created a stir yesterday on the air. Because he made the pronouncement he would have drafted Darnold rather than Lamar Jackson. Of course, that opinion doesn't look good after the game. But he said long term he would not take Lamar Jackson. You're still on that train?
Well, I'm not on the I want Sam Darnold train. So my point is I try to look to history and precedent in terms of forecasting the future. And it's possible that Lamar Jackson is a total paradigm change, right? That there is no precedent for him, and he is going to break the mold of everything that has gone before him in the NFL. I leave that out as a possibility. I don't believe that that happens very often. In fact, in the world of sports, in modern history, how many total precedent-changing athletes have there been in their sport? I think maybe Steph Curry, you can argue, is a precedent-changing athlete in the NBA in that the way that he approached three-point shooting legitimately changed the game everywhere. I don't know that there is that I believe that Lamar Jackson is the Steph Curry of the NFL. And what I mean by that, and people don't really necessarily understand that unless you take a step back and think about it, I'm talking about you watch the game and it's totally different 5 years from now than it was the 5 years before. And I think that's true in the NBA, and I don't see it changing in terms of the rise of the three-point shot. And I think that's overall a trend that was sort of percolating beneath the surface. And then Steph Curry came in, had such incredible success that he changed the way the game was played. And that's been my argument about Steph Curry for a long time, because I coach Little League basketball, and every kid wants to be Steph Curry. You know, they all try to shoot the ball from way farther than they should. I coach, and I constantly have to tell the kids, hey, if you can't make the shot half the time in practice, you should never attempt it in the game. but they all want to be long-range gunners. And as a result, these kids coming up are going to change the way basketball continues to be played, and you're already seeing it at a college level. And a lot of times, people, it makes the game look worse because most people are not Steph Curry, and we've talked about this, for instance, in the NBA NCAA tournament. Guys want to all hit like step-back three long-range daggers to win games instead of trying to drive the basket, get fouled, try to get a layup, get somebody open, things like that. So I don't believe that long-range, what Lamar Jackson is doing, is sustainable because there's never been a long-range sustainable quarterback who has played like he plays.
But so, just the threat of him running, and he may not even have to do that long-term. You've been seeing all season long, and especially last night with the 5 touchdown passes, this guy's got a gun. And I argued this with you halfway through the season that he was proving.
There has never been any quarterback who has done what he does that has done it on a sustainable level. There are quarterbacks who run, but there has never been anybody who has done what he does on a sustainable level. So I'm skeptical that it's going to be able to continue for a long time.
I just don't remember, besides Randall Cunningham, I don't remember seeing any other quote-unquote running quarterback who had the gun and the accuracy that Lamar Jackson has.
Well, first of all, he's not throwing the ball deep very often. If you look, to the credit of the offense, if you go back and look at every throw that he makes, they have tight ends and wide receivers. It's amazing in this offense right now. In the NFL, where it's rare that guys are wide open, he's got guys who are wide open, and it seems to me that almost every time his first read is wide open, right? Like, he drops back to pass, and the ball is out of his hand almost instantaneously, and he has got a tight end who they've got on a matchup that flat out can't cover him, or if they do take the shot down deep, it was a great matchup. Did you see the pass interference that they got in the end zone? They had a freaking linebacker running 60 yards on their slot receiver.
I agree with you there, Clay. It seems like he doesn't have to go through all his progressions.
It's so quick. I mean, and I think that's because the defense is so afraid of the play action fake, or whether he's keeping the ball or whether Mark Ingram is going to run it, all those different things, that his first read is almost always wide open. I mean, it's uncanny how quick he can get rid of the ball to that first read. That's what's most surprising to me is so far this offense is playing so well that defenses aren't even able to take away the first option. Usually that's what happens, right? Eventually an NFL defense catches up and they take away your first option, maybe even your second option, and kind of make you play left-handed. So I would just point out that it wasn't very long ago that Ron Jaworski, I believe it was, who knows a little bit about quarterbacks, went on ESPN and said he believed Colin Kaepernick had forever changed the NFL and that he was going to be the greatest quarterback in the history of the NFL. And that was after Colin Kaepernick went for, I believe it was over 200 yards passing and 200 yards rushing in an NFL playoff game against the Green Bay Packers. Everybody was heralding what Colin Kaepernick had done and the fact that Greg Roman at the time was the offensive coordinator for the other Harbaugh with the San Francisco 49ers, and NFL offenses didn't have an answer for Kaepernick, and nobody was going to be able to stop him. And again, remember, Ron Jaworski said, Colin Kaepernick's going to be the greatest quarterback in the history of the NFL. 2 years later, Colin Kaepernick got benched for Blaine Gabbert. The defense is caught up to what the 49ers were doing. I'm not a guru. I'm not the guys who sit around watching game film and are able to craft X's and O's and figure out everything that's going on. My point would just be, we have never seen a sustainable quarterback who plays the way that that Lamar Jackson does over time. So if you want to argue that it is sustainable, then what you're effectively arguing is this guy is Steph Curry, right? He has forever changed the way his sport is played. And everybody else is going to start to copy and adopt the same methods by which he has been successful. Now, if that happens, it's a total paradigm change in the way that football is played, first of all. But second, then what happens is a lot of other guys start doing what Lamar Jackson is doing, and he doesn't become so unique, right? Because arguably, James Harden has taken what Steph Curry does from an offensive perspective and taking it even more into the stratosphere because he attempts, I believe now, way more threes than Steph Curry ever did. And there are a lot of guys now who have adopted the same style of game as Steph Curry has, and the overall NBA has changed substantially. I'm just skeptical because usually anytime something new is debuted in the NFL, everybody tries to copy it, and before long, defenses catch up to what's going on, and in the laboratory, you have to go back, and the only thing that I have seen that consistently works for a quarterback in the NFL is you have to be able to consistently make plays from the pocket as a passer. Doesn't mean you can't run, but ultimately you have to be able to make plays almost consistently as a passer. We'll see whether that remains true for Lamar Jackson or not. But right now, this offense is ahead of everybody else. It reminds me of the Warriors when they went out and won 73 games that year. They were operating at warp speed at a different level and caliber of speed than everybody else. But what happened? The NBA caught up to the Warriors and other people started adopting their tactics. And it wasn't that the Warriors were, you know, less talented. It was just that their competitive advantage started to get co-opted by other teams who found ways to do a lot of the same things they were doing and also be better at taking away what they did best.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let me go ahead and bring in Dub. What takeaways in a big way did you have from this game?
Well, one of the big takeaways I have right now is that Greg Roman should walk into the owner's office of the Ravens with a blank check and say,
if you're watching him and you're the Washington Redskins or you are the Cincinnati Bengals, who maybe after a year are thinking that maybe their guy is not the answer, or any of these other teams out there that are going to have openings or have openings now. I mean, even with the Dallas Cowboys, if you have seen what Greg Roman has done with Colin Kaepernick and Lamar Jackson, and to be fair, Tyrod Taylor as well, Dak has had an incredible statistical year. But are there things that could be done with Dak and Ezekiel Elliott that are not being done that could lead to them being an even more difficult offense to cover? That's the kind of thing that I would be wondering if I'm Jerry Jones and watching what the Ravens are doing this year.
Yeah, and it kind of reminds me of the Redskins when they had McVay as their OC and they also had Matt LaFleur and Kyle Shanahan on staff. A part of me, I know this is never going to happen, but if you want Lamar Jackson, I feel like Greg Roman is a pretty big key to that.
Yeah.
I mean,
like for the Ravens, you need to pay like head coaching like $6 million a year to your offensive coordinator to keep him for Lamar Jackson.
I mean, that's kind of what I'm thinking right now, because the way he's been calling these games is unbelievable. Because like you mentioned, it seems like someone, and most of the time it's the first option, is wide open every time. And the way he calls these games, it just makes it seem unstoppable for the defense, because they're always on their heels having to worry about Lamar Jackson throwing and running. And then you got Mark Ingram, who's been playing really, really well. And those two tight ends they have are absolute beasts. So,
and it legitimately appears that every time they throw the football, they have somebody wide open.
So, yeah, and I agree. I mean, Lamar Jackson has been absolutely incredible this season, but you got to give a ton of credit to Greg Roman as well, because the way he's been calling these games has been incredible.
Also, their offensive line, because they create some pretty gaping holes for both Lamar Jackson and Mark Ingram in the running attack. And those guys are, you know, unsung heroes on in terms of their overall opportunity and success level, that they have lots of plays where they run the football. And look at how rare it is that they lose yardage. I mean, they run the ball on first down a ton, right? How often are they ever behind the sticks? Like, I very rarely see the Baltimore Raven offense this year in second and 13 or third and 12s, right? Like where they've run the ball on first and second down, they're almost always in second and 4, third and 2. You know, like they're always, it seems like to me, ahead of the down and distance and rarely getting really predictable in terms of what's expected against them. So look, I mean, they are playing at a totally different level right now. Eddie Garcia, what do you think? What big takeaway did you emerge from after this game?
You know, this is going to sound insane, but I'm still not as impressed with Lamar Jackson as it seems like I should be. I mean, when you see five touchdowns, I mean, how does that not blow you away? But if you want to say he's an amazing red zone passer, you know, I'll give you that. But he's still in these situations that are so, you know, they set him up for success by all the circumstances around him. And I'm not saying he's not a part of it. He clearly is. And the way he runs the ball is amazing. And he's being accurate enough in this short passing game. But I'm waiting to see Lamar Jackson and what he does as a passer when they fall behind in a critical moment and he has to lead them down the field with his arm.
Yeah, which may not happen the entire year the way they're playing right now.
But unlikely, though. In the playoffs, I think there's going to be a point in the playoffs he's going to have to do it, and I want to see if he can do it or not.
Yeah, if they get down 14 or, you know, double-digit points in the postseason.
Like he did last year.
Which happens for most teams at some point. It's rare that a team is so good they're never threatened or they're never, like, kind of behind the eight ball. As a part of this 10-game run, and that would be a great question to ask, how many minutes have the Baltimore Ravens actually trailed in the 10-game winning streak that they're on right now? 20 minutes? I mean, I mean that honestly. Like, I don't know how many minutes they've actually trailed in any game during the course of this 10-game win. There haven't been very many. And the two games that they lost are the only two games that they got down double digits all year against the Kansas City Chiefs and against the Cleveland Browns. And they didn't play well, and I'm curious to see if you're a Steelers fan, if anything, you need to be rooting for the Ravens to come out and totally obliterate now the Cleveland Browns so that they rest everybody for the final week of the season instead of, because they would already have the number one seed locked up, and give you a chance to sneak in as the sixth seed potentially in the wild card. But against you guys was probably Lamar Jackson's worst game of the year, right? And they won in overtime. But if you remember, Mike Tomlin chose to give the ball to Lamar Jackson in overtime rather than take the ball on offense himself. I think that was the first game that Devlin Hodges was in, right? I mean, and that's still, I think, a pretty wild decision given how well Lamar Jackson has played, that Tomlin would make the decision to let him have the ball first. But that's probably the worst game that he's played, and that was now, what, was that the first game of the 10-game winning streak for them?
Close to it, yeah.
Yeah. So you're not a believer 100%. What about you, Roberto?
I don't think anybody in the AFC is going to beat the Ravens. I think they're going to the Super Bowl for sure. But as on the long run, I think we saw with Colin Kaepernick, it's not gonna last. I mean, that sooner or later the defense are going to figure him out. And while Eddie was talking, Danny G was laughing over here at us because he says that what we're saying is crazy.
If you're making the argument.
I just wonder why you can't enjoy it while the
I didn't say
while
I didn't enjoy it.
Well, I know you did. You hate the Baltimore Ravens
with a
passion. I do,
but that doesn't matter. I
just feel like if Lamar played for another team, Eddie, then you would be impressed with five touchdowns.
No, I wouldn't be, because all these he threw a one-yard touchdown pass, so a three-yard touchdown pass. I mean, look, Sam Darnold can't do that, but it just, I've got to see him as a passer.
Are you kidding me? He was throwing the ball down the field.
Not really. No, he wasn't. He throws to his tight end all the time.
That fourth and one play, he didn't throw the ball down the field on fourth and one.
He got the two big plays he had. One of them was almost out of the back of the end zone, and the other one was a pass interference call in the end zone.
Before the season started, I heard he couldn't throw the ball at all.
Okay, he could throw the ball a little bit now. Are you happy? You've drank in the Kool-Aid for this guy crazy.
No, not at all. I have eyes.
He's a great football player.
Same exact thing with Kaepernick.
He makes plays, but he's not. I'm not convinced he's a great passer. I'm not.
I don't understand why you have to compare him to Kaepernick or anyone else. He's Lamar Jackson. I've not seen a dude like him, and neither has the rest of the league. That's why his jersey's number one.
If you want to argue, the reason why you compare him is because that's what sports is. If you want to argue...
But what if there's no accurate comparison?
That's your argument. That doesn't happen very often. I gave you Steph Curry. I'm asking you,
name somebody else
that has been a fundamental paradigm changer in the last 25 years of major sports.
No, you're right. If there's not a comp for him, then there's not. So that's why I'm not taking the Kaepernick thing.
My argument is just, and this happened with Steph Curry too. There were a lot of people who questioned the Golden State Warriors as they were running through on that 73-9 season. And remember, they didn't win the title that year. even though they were a transcendent team that changed the way the NBA was played forever, they ended up giving up that 3-1 series lead, and they had the best season ever that didn't end with a title. I think the question with Lamar Jackson is, I think it's a very valid one, is he Steph Curry? Is he going to change the way that the game is played, or is he Colin Kaepernick, a guy who is a flash in the pan, looks extraordinary for a couple of years, and then regresses, and the rest of the NFL continues to move on? Like, would I rather buy stock right now in Lamar Jackson? I think the Sam Darnold argument that Doug made is kind of a funny one. But if you had me say right now, okay, you can have for the next 10 years, you can have Patrick Mahomes or you can have Lamar Jackson. I'm taking Patrick Mahomes in a heartbeat because Patrick Mahomes to me is a natural evolution of the way that the NFL game has been played over the last 25 years. He looks like a guy who can run if he needs to, but is a pocket passing quarterback who is going to be great until he's 37 or 38 years old. That gives me 15 years of knowing that Patrick Mahomes is going to be really good. Lamar Jackson, maybe I get him good and he's good for two or three more years, but I don't think that he's going to fundamentally change.
Well, that was my question. Okay, you're saying Mahomes, which I understand, but they're about to have to give Mahomes a king's ransom, whereas you still have a few more years with Lamar Jackson on the rookie deal.
Yeah, but I'm saying 5 to 10 years.
So who's going to get a Super Bowl first, though, Mahomes or Jackson?
Well, I think Mahomes.
To Dub's point, if they could keep Roman, it just seems like the Ravens are in a better situation as far as the team goes because they have more money to work with.
I disagree with – it depends on how long of a future you want to talk about. Are the Ravens in a really good spot under this rookie contract with Lamar Jackson for the next 2 to 3 years? Yes. Is Lamar Jackson going to be really good in 7 years? No, I don't think so. I'd rather have Patrick Mahomes.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Let's go ahead and bring in Alex Marvez. Alex, thanks for getting up early with us. Is anyone going to beat the Ravens in the AFC or in the NFL?
Well, let's see if they have to go to Foxborough, right? I mean, are they able to win out on their schedule? Does Week 17 matter to the Baltimore Ravens? I mean, that's, you know, if they get to play at home, and by the way, they've never made a Super Bowl as a number one seed, but they play at Cleveland in Week 16, and that's the biggie, right? I mean, and the Browns did have some defensive success against Baltimore earlier this year, so if the Browns are able to take care of business, it's obviously going to help the New England Patriots quite a bit. If the Pats win out, being able to, you know, again, try to catch this team, but if the Ravens have that number one seed, Clay, no, it's looking pretty darn good for them. But listen, some vulnerabilities last night. Special teams, no bueno. And also, look, on defense, you know, Sam Darnold and Le'Veon Bell did have some success. So, listen, the problem I have with the Ravens is much like with the 49ers. You know, when we talk about teams like New England, right, that's always in the playoffs year after year. We have a history of the Green Bay Packers, et cetera. When you know teams and are comfortable with them, you feel pretty good talking about their chances, right? This team reminds me a little bit of, and I say this in a weird way, but remember the 99 Rams who just came on the scene with something completely new and different, right? And look, I know Baltimore was a playoff team last year, but this is a very different Ravens team. And it's like, do we trust them, right? And I think that's the whole thing with the Baltimore Ravens. Do you trust Lamar Jackson in the postseason for some team to not come up with something different to stop this team? Because, again, that's the nature of the NFL, right? All you need is one great game plan, and you win, and you move on, and you don't have to worry about the Ravens.
What's going to happen with Greg Roman?
Ah, my man Greg Roman. By the way, big pro wrestling fan. That's one of our bonds, by the way. I've known Greg for a long time, and man, I'm so happy for him. And he will be. Look, he was someone who I thought should have been on the head coaching radar before. I actually interviewed for the Minnesota Vikings job that went to Mike Zimmer a number of years ago, and I think Greg will be a very hot candidate. Look, he doesn't. The thing with Greg, and it, quite honestly, he doesn't have a head coaching presence command. He's not telegenic. He realizes this. You know what I mean? But when you talk about a guy who I think can command a room and earn the trust of his players, I think Greg Roman is there. The big question, though, is this. You know, what type of, you know, system do you want to run with Greg Roman? Like, if you're a team that has a head coaching vacancy and you don't have a quarterback like Lamar Jackson, do you want Greg Roman as your coach, or are you expecting him? Let's say, for example, the Carolina Panthers, right?
Yeah.
And while I hear Mike McCarthy's name associated with them, you know, you heard David Tepper tell Albert Breer, Sports Illustrated, you know, look, we think Cam Newton is a franchise-type quarterback. It seems like David Tepper wants to stick with Cam Newton for one more year. Well, does a guy like Greg Roman and that type of offense all of a sudden become extremely appealing to you because you think you can get Cam Newton playing like Lamar Jackson in terms of running the football, throwing from the pocket, and maybe you don't run him as much, but you let Cam be Cam again? I mean, that's going to be a very interesting thing for the Panthers to consider, but also for any team looking for a head coach. For example, Matt Ryan, do we see him running a Greg Roman-type offense? Greg can change his offense to accommodate a quarterback, I know that, but let's be honest here. A team that's looking for Greg Roman probably is hoping to get a Lamar Jackson 2.0 situation.
Okay, so the big question coming out of this season, I think, regardless of how it ends, is going to be, what is the sustainability of Lamar Jackson's excellence? And the analogy that I made to start off the show is Lamar Jackson Steph Curry? And the reason why I use Steph Curry as an example is Steph Curry changed the way the NBA played. And he was the, you know, pioneer of the gun from long range. And to a lesser extent, or maybe a broader extent, the Golden State Warriors embraced that same philosophy with Klay Thompson, the Splash Brothers, everything else. And the Golden State Warriors had that incredible run where they went 73-9. Now, they lost in the NBA Finals. But they redefined the way the NBA was going to play going forward, and a lot of teams went out and copied much of what they did. And the Golden State Warriors were still good, but their uniqueness sort of disappeared and was overall taken over by the league. Or is this a situation like we have seen before where, say, a Colin Kaepernick for a couple of years springs up and looks unstoppable? Also, Greg Roman, by the way, was in charge of Colin Kaepernick back then. And then other teams catch up and the NFL goes back to being much of what it has always been. I mean, the great thing about the NFL, or the challenging thing about the NFL, depending on how you want to look at it, is everybody copies what works so quickly that what works doesn't work for long, right? I mean, it's again, the cliche that I think applies very well is the NFL stands for not for long, right? It's a league that evolves very quickly. How do you apply the precedents that we have seen so far to the current situation with Lamar Jackson?
Well, first, I don't want to be morbid, but, I mean, we were talking a little bit about this, too, with RG3, right?
Yes.
And then RG3 goes down with a knee injury, comes back, and you know, he tells Mike Shanahan, I want to become a pocket passer.
Yeah.
And, you know, and everything then falls apart from there, and RG3 is never the same. And incidentally, by the way, with the Baltimore Ravens, of course, as the backup for Lamar Jackson. So we have to consider injury here, right? I think there's something else we have to consider, too, Clay, is that are we going to see less quarterback shelf life as time goes on? And I'm going to use Cam Newton again as an example, a guy who made so many plays.
Or Andrew Luck.
Andrew Luck took a beating. But he was more of a drop-back guy who just played behind a terrible offensive line for so long. It took a toll. In the case of Cam, you know, he ran, obviously, and those hits catch up. You know, in your backyard, Steve McNair, right?
Yeah.
And you think about him in his early 30s and how the guy, I mean, when he stepped out on the field, he looked like a refrigerator in pads because he had so much protective stuff on.
That's right.
Because, you know, because he was just so beat up through his career. So are we looking at a situation where Clay, rather than thinking about, oh, a franchise quarterback for 10, 12, 15 years to come, you're thinking about a guy, let's have him for 5 or 6 years and then change him out. And then use another type quarterback who, you know, can make plays with his legs as well. But what I don't want to do here is diminish what Lamar Jackson is doing in the passing game, number one, because he is a very good passer. And a lot of times we've seen traditionally, like everyone wants to make the Michael Vick comparison with him. Well, Michael Vick was not a very accurate passer. He was under 60%. Lamar Jackson has worked his tail off to become a really good thrower. I mean, you see, you know, that touchdown pass last night to Marquise Brown in the back of the end zone, that was perfect, right? I mean, you know, great catch by Brown and touchdown for Lamar Jackson.
To be fair, too. Imagine what Michael Vick could have done if an NFL team had built an entire offense around him, because a lot of the throws that Lamar Jackson is making are first read inside of 7 or 8 yards to his tight ends or his crossing wide receivers or his back out of the backfield. A lot of his throws are really rapid, short passes, right? So
it is interesting to think about. And Michael Vick didn't. Michael Vick didn't work. Okay.
Yeah.
As you know, the Michael Vick narrative.
And he said that. That's not something that you're just saying. I mean, Michael Vick has said, I didn't put in the time that I should have when I was young.
Right. Well, this guy is just working his tail off to try to get better.
Yeah.
So I think Lamar Jackson is a pretty special guy. But let's talk. Okay. So who's the second best team in the AFC? We know for sure New England. Maybe in the NFL. And we talk about, well, copycat league. They get nothing out of the tight ends. I believe they have one tight end touchdown this entire season. Right. And, you know, they just completely neglected the position, but yet they're winning games. So when I say you have to be in for a penny, in for a pound, yeah, there's some concepts from the Greg Roman offense that you can borrow, but think about who has a more tight end-centric offense. They have three tight ends that they use and feature on a regular basis, plus a fullback in Patrick Ricard. And, I mean, so are you going to change your team to completely minimize the wide receiver position outside of maybe one or two guys? And that's really it. Marquise Brown and Seth Roberts is a secondary target. I know Willie Snead is there, but did he even have a pass catch last night? So, yeah, teams are going to borrow from Greg Roman, but it's a pretty radical change from what most NFL teams do if you want to try to completely, you know, use what Greg is doing, and that is you got to go big on tight ends, minimize wide receiver, certain type of offensive lineman you're looking for, and you got to hope your quarterback not only is healthy, but then you probably have to have a clone behind him. Because I can't see this necessarily working if they have to go back to a traditional offense under a more traditional style quarterback. I think that's something else to consider here, Clay, too. At least they could run the same stuff with RG3, although probably not as effectively, obviously, as with Lamar Jackson on the field.
Okay, let's go to the games that are upcoming. And we're talking to Alex Marvez. You can find him on Twitter at Alex Marvez. And you can listen to him at SiriusXM. Let's go to the big games, all right? There are three that I would say are pretty big. And I want to start with the one that is for a division title, potentially. Texans on the road against the Titans. Titans around a 3-point favorite in this game, have been on fire the last three games with Ryan Tannehill. And really, since the second half of the game against the Kansas City Chiefs, they've won four in a row, six of their last seven. Texans, a bit of an enigma, right? They go out, they beat the Patriots, but on either side of that Patriots win, a beatdown that they took in Baltimore and the week after the Patriots win, a beatdown that they took at home against the Denver Broncos. What happens in this one?
Clay, by the way, have you noticed the Titans have started winning since you started playing your 1990s music, basically, on the rejoin? I believe that these two things are connected, by the way. I want to point that out.
I think the world peaked in the late 90s, so maybe that's also when the Titans peaked, by the way.
Pretty much, you're right about that. And listen, I'm going to throw some stats at you here that tell you just how well Ryan Tannehill is playing. Okay, ever since he came on the field, he leads the NFL in completion percentage, passing yards per attempt, and passer rating when it comes to play action. Okay, so what's happening here is there's this incredible symbiosis, yes, symbiosis, between Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry, who now has four straight games with at least 100 rushing yards and one rushing touchdown. That is tied with Earl Campbell. Yes, Earl Campbell of the Houston Oilers for the most in franchise history. Derek also has 599 rushing yards since week 10, which is the most in the NFL, and Houston has allowed a 100-yard rusher in two of the past four games. So, you know, when you have to worry, and by the way, too, the second half is where the Titans, as you know, take control of games. You don't even have to bother watching the first half. Just tune into the second half because Derrick Henry makes teams tired. I know he's got a hamstring injury right now, but he says he will play on Sunday against Houston. Look, what you don't know is a hangover effect from playing the New England Patriots. So weird that out of the past eight teams to beat the Patriots, they went 1-7 the game after.
They put so much into trying to beat the Patriots, exactly. By and large.
Exactly. And then Drew Lock comes down. It was my lock of the week pick on SiriusXM, Houston beating Denver. But I should have said it's the Drew Lock pick of the week.
Yeah,
gone
right.
With Denver. Instead, right? Because it was, I mean, look, what he did was actually unprecedented in NFL history in terms of passing yards and touchdowns for a rookie quarterback making his first road start. So, you know, do we chalk this? Like you said, the Texans are an enigma. You don't know what you get from week to week to them. And look, when they lost to Denver, they became the sixth team in the NFL history to defeat an opponent 9 games over .500, then lose to a team 4 games under .500 the next game. It'll tell you that they were not prepared for this one. Look, the return of Will Fuller, he practiced on Thursday despite a hamstring injury. If he plays, that makes a huge difference because that's where Deshaun Watson thrives, having that deep threat. And Kenny Stills is a good deep threat, but he's not Will Fuller, and that makes a huge difference in this game. By the way, I do want to point out that Deshaun Watson plays extremely well against the Tennessee Titans, a 120.7 career passer rating against Tennessee. By the way, that is the highest for any Oilers Titans quarterback in the history of that franchise with at least 80 pass attempts. So it should be a good one on Sunday.
Yeah, and I think I'm correct. And the last six games have all been won by the home team. So it should be interesting to see how much of a difference that makes. Obviously, in the NFL, home field advantage doesn't seem like it matters as much as it used to back in the day. But that is a massive game for the AFC South lead. All right, what about the Bills going on the road against the Steelers? Going to be the Sunday night football game. A lot of attention on Devlin Hodges. Can Josh Allen go on the road and get a good win for the Buffalo Bills? What do you see here?
Yeah, well, you listen, and Pittsburgh's defense has just been unbelievable since the addition of Minkah Fitzpatrick, right? And so many of us are just saying, what are you doing when they traded a first-round pick
including me.
For this guy? Yeah, I know. Well, we all – and listen, you know, and this is a credit to Mike Tomlin, right, who, by the way, made some NFL history last week, Clay. He joined Don Shula and Marty Schottenheimer as the only coaches in the 100-year history of this league to have 13 straight seasons to start their career without a losing record.
That's wild.
Marty – yeah. Isn't that amazing? Shula did his first 13 years in the league. Marty Schottenheimer, his first 14 years in the league, till suffering his first losing season. So I think we really sometimes underestimate the job that Mike Tomlin does. And I think this year, when you realize all the drama you had to deal with the past few years and those types of things, what he was dealing with behind the scenes. But listen, give credit to his personnel department as well. They've given him the two edge rushers that he needs to thrive. That's T.J. Watt and Bud Dupree. And you throw in there on top of that Minkah playing the deep safety spot. The Steelers had a perfect idea of what they wanted to do with Minkah, unlike the Miami Dolphins, by the way, who played him at all these different positions in their backfield, and they wonder, why isn't the guy thriving? Well, because you tried to do too much with him, and you could never figure out what you wanted to do with the number 11 overall pick in the draft. Good job, guys. That being said, I hear you on Duck Hodges, and look, he hasn't had to win too many games himself, but he's not afraid to throw deep, and I give him a lot of credit for that. Buffalo, the big question is the offense, right? And with Josh Allen, and they're not dynamic enough at times. I mean, there's spurts on this team, right? And Josh Allen has enjoyed a better season than what he did in the past, but he's just not you know what I'm saying? Against Baltimore, and I know Baltimore's a tough deal, but they just could not really have any sort of offensive consistency. I think that's a tough thing. By the way, Pittsburgh 6-0 in their past six games against the Buffalo Bills. And the last time the Bills beat the Steelers in Pittsburgh, got to go back to the 1992 AFC Divisional Round, Clay. That's a long time ago. So I think Pittsburgh, really one of the true surprise teams in the NFL, keeps the heat on the Baltimore Ravens, prevents them from clinching the division, and wins this one.
All right, so want to go back for a sec now to there are four teams that we just all talked about, the Texans, the Titans, the Bills, and the Steelers. Only three of those teams will be able to make the playoffs. And the AFC playoff picture seems to be down to those four. Again, the Bills, the Steelers, the Titans, the Texans. Which team is the odd team out if you had to predict right now with three games to go?
Oof, you're putting me on the spot. I do think ultimately there's a fairy tale end for the Pittsburgh Steelers, right? And I think that's they're at the New York Jets and they're at Baltimore. And here's a really big mitigating factor and why Pittsburgh, this game is so big to them, because I do think they can beat the Jets, even if it's at New York. Obviously, the Jets have seen better days. But do the Ravens sit their folks in Week 17?
Yeah.
And that's a huge deal. And as you saw the NFL Network report, the Ravens are probably not going to play Lamar Jackson if the division is wrapped up, nor could you blame them, right? So I think we got to start putting Pittsburgh in there. The big question is, does Buffalo fade out as it goes on? Because remember, their schedule, they took advantage of some pretty easy team, an easier schedule. A lot of teams that lose. So that's why I think you got to say that I do think Tennessee, and again, Tennessee and Houston, let's say they split.
Yeah.
Right? So Tennessee still got to go. They still play New Orleans. And
yep.
that's a toughie for them. So
and the Texans game against the Bucs is not looking easy right now.
No, not with the way Jameis Winston is throwing the football, although you can count on a couple turnovers. I know that. But I can't get burned by Houston again. Every time I believe in this team, they let me down. So I'm going to go Tennessee winning the division. I'm going to go with – because I just think Tannehill is legit. I think what he's doing is real. I think what Derrick Henry is doing is real. And the defense is sound enough. So let me go with Tennessee and curse you, Clay. Sorry about this. I'm going to go with them. And I just think maybe Buffalo can stumble into a spot. But they're obviously a team that looks like a one-and-done in the first round. And I'm going to get Pittsburgh. I'm going to go with the Duck. The guy does enough. He doesn't make huge mistakes. And the defense is good enough for them to win games.
All right, last of the big games, I would say, is the Rams on the road against the Cowboys. What happens here?
You know what the Rams are doing now? They've adjusted. Sean McVay has evolved, and this is what good coaches do, right? So what they're doing is now a lot more play-action passing, and Jared Goff, by having that, so much better, right? And they're using what's called 12 personnel, one running back, two tight ends. They've used it almost 50% of the time the past 2 weeks, and they average 502 yards per game against Arizona and Seattle. Compare that to 353 yards in the first 12 games of the season. Tyler Higbee has gone off. They're using Todd Gurley more, which has been effective. I mean, look, he's averaging 114 yards from scrimmage the past two games, and he's also averaged 21 touches per game since week 11. So they're getting him involved. They realize, hey, it doesn't matter to have a fresh Todd Gurley in January if you're not playing in January. And listen, the defense, too. Aaron Donald, I mean, is playing fantastic. The defense has been among the NFL's best since acquiring Jalen Ramsey. So all that being said, the Cowboys, Jason Garrett this week, by the way, put together a highlight reel of positive plays. Yes, there are Dallas Cowboys highlights, but there are from the past couple, you know, past couple seasons or whatever, to emphasize this is how good we can play, to try to get some positive mojo going for his team. But they're on their first, they've lost three straight games for the second time this season. It's the first year with multiple three-game losing streaks since pre-Dak in 2015, and they're 0-6 against teams with a winning record. You just got to feel, though, is this it for the Cowboys? Because you could just see this spiral continuing if they don't beat the Rams. I think the Rams get it done, though. I think they're a better team. They're a hotter team right now.
Outstanding, as always. Appreciate you hanging out with us. He's Alex Marvez. Go follow him on Twitter. Good stuff, my man.
Thank you, Clyde. Be good.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.
Appreciate all of you hanging out with us across all 50 states as we get ready for a big weekend in the NFL. We got underway last night with the Baltimore Ravens going out and dominating yet again for a 10th straight week against the Jets, who were woefully inadequate when it comes to the overall results of this game. Lamar Jackson, 5 touchdown passes, effectively locked up the MVP in the NFL. And the question as we go forward is, I would say, twofold. Can anybody slow the Ravens down? And are there any signs of ominousness at all in the horizon or on the horizon for the Baltimore Ravens? They continue to be playing at a level, especially on the offensive side of the ball, ahead of everyone else in the league. They are in an incredibly strong position coming down the stretch run of the season now. They have 2 games left on the road against the Browns. Remember, the Browns beat the Ravens back earlier in the season. The Ravens started the season 2-2 and now have won 10 games in a row, if my math is right, and I believe it is, to sit at 12-2. All the Ravens have to do is split now against 2 divisional opponents. The Browns and the Steelers are coming to town to finish the season. Split those games, and it is impossible for the New England Patriots to catch them, even if they go 3-0 down the stretch of the season. So that is a story that is certainly worth following as we continue, because, man, the question that I have, and I've had for a few weeks now, is how sustainable is Lamar Jackson's run of dominance? And in particular, is this something like Steph Curry did to the NBA, where the game overall changes, or is Lamar Jackson's dominance a blip on the radar that will not sustain itself for very long in the future, much like, say, for instance, Colin Kaepernick, who looked like, remember, Ron Jaworski came out and said, if you remember, I'm going to bring in the crew, I want to get their opinions on this. After Colin Kaepernick ran for 200 yards and basically passed for 200 yards, in a playoff game against the Green Bay Packers, Ron Jaworski, who knows a thing or two about football, went on the ESPN and said, Colin Kaepernick is going to be the greatest quarterback in the history of the NFL. Well, what happened? 2 years later, just 2 years later, Colin Kaepernick is benched for Blaine Gabbert, starts his protest, and his career basically ends. So the NFL caught up with what Colin Kaepernick was doing. Colin Kaepernick's offensive coordinator at the time, by the way, Greg Roman. So is Lamar Jackson, there's no doubt he's the MVP this year. There have been, if you look at the MVP list in the NFL, guys who occasionally cycle up, have everything go perfect for them, win the NFL MVP, and then aren't necessarily the greatest players for the rest of their career. There are sometimes NFL MVPs that last forever, and it's kind of like a career achievement award. So if you look and see, like, okay, who's won the MVP, like the list of guys who have won the MVP, well, some of these guys are going to last forever. Other guys are going to just kind of be around for a little while. And I'll give you an example. So if you go back to history, since, let's go back to, what do you think is a fair portion of time to go back to. Let's go back to Dan Marino. Dan Marino's a long time ago, right? Long time ago. I'm sorry, Dolphin fan, for bringing this back up. I believe Dan Marino won the MVP in his second year as quarterback in the league. All right, Dan Marino wins the MVP. I'm just going to run through like 30 years of MVP awards really quick. Dan Marino, Hall of Famer, all right, for quarterbacks. John Elway, Hall of Famer. Boomer Esiason. I don't think Boomer's in the Hall of Fame, right? Like just kind of a one-year blip for Boomer Esiason. I think that was the Bengals year when they had the icky shuffle. If I'm not mistaken, the Bengals went to the Super Bowl and lost. Joe Montana, clearly one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Randall Cunningham. Probably surprises some of you that Randall Cunningham won the NFL MVP award when he was playing for the Eagles all the way back in 1990. I didn't remember that as him being a quarterback that had won the MVP. Steve Young, Hall of Famer. Steve Young, again, clearly Hall of Famer. Brett Favre, back-to-back, 3 out of 4 years, Brett Favre won the MVP. Only Barry Sanders was in there. Kurt Warner, MVP. Good example, by the way, of a guy who kind of came out of nowhere. Kurt Warner and that Rams offense came out of nowhere. Remember, Trent Green got injured. Kurt Warner takes over. They go out and they win the Super Bowl. Kurt Warner then wins it again because that Rams offense under Mike Martz, the greatest show on turf, nobody could catch up with it. They had a 3-year run there that was incredible. So Kurt Warner, Marshall Faulk, Kurt Warner again. Rich Gannon. Remember Rich Gannon? I think earlier in this week I misspoke. Rich Gannon had that incredible year out of nowhere with the Raiders, and they ended up losing to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But that Rich Gannon year kind of came out of nowhere. Brad Johnson and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers beat them in the Super Bowl. And then you get into Peyton Manning. He wins it. Same year, Steve McNair is the co-winner, and Steve McNair was incredible that year. And then we kind of get into the Peyton Manning era and the Brady era. Manning would go on to win 5 MVPs. Tom Brady has won 3 MVPs. Cam Newton, Aaron Rodgers has won 2 MVPs. Cam Newton, Matt Ryan, Patrick Mahomes, and it looks like Lamar Jackson is going to win pretty easily in 2019. So which era sort of would you put Lamar Jackson in? Is he a blip in the radar, or is this going to be a sustainable level of dominance for years and years to come? I think that's a question to ask about Lamar Jackson right now, because I just ran through some of these MVPs. There are guys who blipped up and became really good for a year or two. Randall Cunningham, Boomer Esiason, guys that are good quarterbacks, Rich Gannon, Steve McNair even a little bit, but didn't necessarily have the same sustained level of dominance over time. And I want to bring in the crew now. What do you think? How long is this Ravens run going to last? And the analogy you can also make if you want to cross sports is Lamar Jackson Steph Curry, or is he when I use Steph Curry, I mean, is he changing the game, or is he just a good player that the NFL will catch up to and he will not change the game?
Well, first of all, really quick, because I'm a Raiders homer, Rich Gannon had 4 amazing seasons from 99 to 2002, 4-time Pro Bowler in that time, Spawn. Come on. And Clay, by the way, RIP to the Oakland Coliseum. No more dirt infields in the NFL. No more after this season and last home game coming up against the Jags. But to answer your question, it's too early to tell, because last season I heard when Lamar went on that winning streak, well, we'll see what happens in the playoffs, and he obviously got stopped by the Chargers. And you and others said, well, now defenses and defensive coordinators...
He didn't just get stopped. He got humiliated.
Oh, he did. But he took that and he went to work.
Well, I think that the Ravens redid their entire offense.
They did too. They all went to work hard during the offseason. It shows you what hard work can accomplish.
But
just like that T-shirt.
The NFL
he wears.
Is in general a not for long league. So,
what were the predictions though during the offseason about the Ravens? No one picked them to win the division.
I think they had their over under was 8 games.
Yeah, a lot of people had him falling on his face just like he did in the playoffs as an extension of that performance, saying defensive coordinators are going to catch up to this guy even more. He's going to have a bad year too. That's what we heard. So now I'm hearing that again at the end of this crazy good MVP season. And so I don't know about these lists and making these lists and talking about eras and time periods until we have a larger sample size. Is he going to get hurt? Maybe. You saw that huge hit he took.
He took a monster
he
hit.
He took a monster hit in last night's game. And that was a little bit scary, but he seems to pop up and smile and laugh. And I said this weeks ago when we argued about Mahomes and him, I said, maybe he's a little more durable than Mahomes. You saw Mahomes hurt his hand, and obviously he had that bad knee injury. We don't know how Lamar Jackson's going to hold up to all these hits. He's been hit, what, 35 times more than any other quarterback this season?
We do know the precedent. It is that you can't take these hits and continue to be a good quarterback long range.
Yeah, so I would bring a sliding expert into the Ravens. Like, dude, you got to learn how to slide and protect yourself going forward if you want a long career at this high of a
Alex
level.
Alex Marvez made an interesting point. He said, right now people think of quarterbacks and they think, hey, I want this guy to be my player for the next 10 or 12 years, right? When you think about a franchise quarterback, you think about a guy who's going to be there for a long time. For instance, I'll use Patrick Mahomes as an example. I think there are a lot of Kansas City Chiefs fans listening to us right now who expect 100% in their heart of hearts that a decade from now, Patrick Mahomes will be as good as he is right now. They think that he is going to be like Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, like he's going to be a guy who is going to be there, Peyton Manning, a long time as a pocket passer. Doesn't mean he can't run. But Aaron Rodgers, pretty mobile early in his career, doesn't move as much now as he used to. But relatively speaking, he has aged into the pocket passing realm and continued to evolve and be really good. And the expectation is, a lot of those guys have, the expectation is that Patrick Mahomes is going to be able to do that as well. The reason why I use Steph Curry is Steph Curry changed the game. And there was no precedent for a player playing the way that Steph Curry did when the Splash Brothers came out and took the NBA by storm and won 73 games. Now, what happened was the rest of the NBA evolved, and now everybody shoots threes in a somewhat similar fashion to the Golden State Warriors. And in fact, there's a great write-up about how Steph Curry evolved his game and how he had started to take more mid-range jumpers because those were the shots that were open to him, because people were running at him at the three-point line at such a ridiculous rate. So there's no precedent for a running quarterback to have long-range success in the NFL. Doesn't mean that there can't be long-range success, but there's no precedent for it.
Yeah.
So if you are arguing that he is going to continue on this path, there is literally no one that you can point to who's done it before.
Well, and when you finally came around on Lamar Jackson and took him from ninth or eighth on your MVP list and put him all the way up to the top, finally, and you came around, you called him a unicorn.
Yeah.
And so your analogy with Steph Curry might be a good one because, and this will play to your ego, you'll like this analogy. Just because something has never happened before doesn't mean that it can't happen. Years ago, I heard that our time slot couldn't be dominant. Like, no one could dominate it. Why? Because Stephen A. Smith and others before him, they couldn't stay up late and watch the games and then get up early and be able to thrive on the radio. It was just too hard for their schedules. That's why a lot of guys bowed out of the morning drive slot before the morning drive slot. All of us, and you've been able to do it now for how many years? Almost four?
We're going on 4 years now.
Yeah, and the rest of the crew here, it's not easy, especially on the West Coast. It's like a graveyard shift, but all of us, for whatever reason, have really good chemistry and we're able to thrive in this time slot. And so now we're setting these ratings records and things are on fire. But I heard that couldn't be done before we got in here and did it. So when people tell me Lamar can't do it, and obviously he heard all that too, just because it's not been done before doesn't mean he can't change the game.
It's a strong argument. And you certainly can play to my ego by pointing out that we have changed the game in mornings at Fox Sports Radio. We set a new record for people who are waking up now. We're up 57% over last year, which is flat out unheard of. And last month was a new record as well. So thanks to all the listeners out there. But I do think that it is important to look to precedent. And that's why I use the Steph Curry analogy. I'm not sure. You guys may be able to think of somebody else. But I'm not sure that there has been anybody else who has changed the game in my life more than Steph Curry did in the NBA. And so it's possible that Lamar Jackson is going to do for the NFL what Steph Curry did for the NBA. Now, some of you out there can also point out, hey, the game itself in the NFL evolved quite a bit in terms of the passing game taking over and taking over precedence. And what has been most important with the passing game taking over? Not just the evolution of the quarterback, but also the rise of the wide receiver. One of the things that doesn't get talked about enough is the Ravens at wide receiver really don't do very much, right? I know they got Hollywood Brown, and I know he's had some okay success. But if you look at their wide receiver statistics, almost all of their catches are going to tight ends. So it's not just that Lamar Jackson is a different style of quarterback. It's that Greg Roman has designed an offensive system that is totally different than anything we've seen before. And I don't claim to be an X's and O's guy. But the system that he has designed, if you talk to X's and O's guys, is so difficult to defend because with those big tight ends in the game, the Ravens are both big and fast from a matchup perspective. And let me try to explain it really kind of simply with you. With those tight ends, you have trouble with your ability to cover them because you don't have guys that are big and physical enough to cover them down the field. But you also don't have guys, if you try to get big and physical enough, you put those guys on the field, then you get exploited in the run game because those tight ends are big and strong enough that if you go with lighter guys to try to cover them, you know, quicker, faster guys, then they get dominated in the run game. But so they create an incredible matchup problem. So a lot of focus on Lamar Jackson. But it's not just Lamar Jackson. It's the system that's been built. The wide receivers really don't matter very much. And the rise of the quarterback has simultaneously heralded the rise of wide receivers. But what's interesting with the Ravens is the rise of Lamar Jackson has obviously been good for Mark Ingram, but it's also heralded the rise of the tight ends as matchup nightmares within the context of that offense. So I think it is really going to be incredibly fascinating to see what the response is in the NFL here. So you are saying you would buy stock in Lamar Jackson 5 years from now.
I would, because of how hard he works and how humble he is. I think he can get even better, which is scary.
All right. Would you buy stock in Lamar? I don't think anybody's questioning now that Lamar Jackson's stock is super high, right? He's going to be the NFL MVP. His team is going to be the overall number one seed. What I am most interested in now is what is the sustainability of this level of success? And also, are they going to be able to win a title this year, right? Because they are, let's use the Steph Curry analogy again. The year that the Golden State Warriors took over the NBA and rewrote the basketball record books, they didn't win a title. They lost in the finals to LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers, who were running a more traditional style offense. So in order for the Steph Curry analogy to be exceeded here, what Lamar Jackson would need to do is actually win a championship, which Steph Curry could not do that 1 year. Now, to be fair to the Warriors and to Steph Curry, they won championships in other years, and they were able to sustain their level of excellence even as other teams rose up around them. Do you believe, Dub, that this is a sustainable offense? Is this Lamar Jackson year more akin to Steph Curry changing the NBA or, for instance, the hot streak that Colin Kaepernick got on with the same offensive coordinator a couple of years ago?
Well, I think it is sustainable, but I think it all depends a lot on Greg Roman, like I mentioned earlier in the show, because you look at his history. We all know that he had Colin Kaepernick as his
quarterback. He's the offensive coordinator for people who may not be familiar with the name Greg Roman. He's the offensive coordinator for the Ravens.
Right, and he had Colin Kaepernick in the past, and he also had Tyrod Taylor. And when Tyrod Taylor was his quarterback, they had some really nice success as well.
With the Bills.
That's right. And I think, you know, I think Lamar deserves most of the credit, obviously, but I think you can give, you know, 30% straight to Greg Roman, the way he's set up this offense, the way he calls the plays during the game. And I think if he does decide to take a head coaching job elsewhere next season or maybe in a couple seasons, there could be a pretty sizable drop-off in Lamar Jackson's success. But I think if those two are together for the next 5, 6, 7 years, I think this is absolutely sustainable.
The question is, I mean, you would think that Greg Roman will get a head coaching job in the offseason, and that would theoretically create a challenge for the Baltimore Ravens and being able to replace the guy who formulated this entire offense. Now, maybe the offense is so successful at this point that there's lots of people who could be handed the reins and be able to roll with it. Another analogy you could use, by the way, would be what Mike Martz did back in the day with the Rams when they were still in St. Louis. When the greatest show on turf was going with Kurt Warner, Marshall Faulk, Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt, all of those off, Orlando Pace, I think, was the offensive lineman who was the Hall of Famer there. All of that offense was really hard to stop for about 3 years. They won one Super Bowl in that first year, and then sort of everybody caught up with what the Rams were doing, and it became a part of the larger NFL landscape. Eddie Garcia, you are not as confident earlier in the show. You think this is not a sustainable offense.
Yeah, I would definitely lean that way at the moment. Now, I do think that what the Ravens are doing as it stands right now, I think that's sustainable. I think they can continue to be a successful team, a team that's in the running for the playoffs every year with the way that Lamar Jackson is playing now. But I think the bigger question, what you're asking is this a game-changing
yes.
type of situation? And I would say the answer is no for a couple of reasons. But I think the biggest reason is there are no Lamar Jacksons growing on trees. I mean, you can find in the NBA, I don't know, like a Trae Young or, you know, James Harden or whatever, guys that can shoot threes. And if coaches see that successful, then they're willing to allow players to do that more than they would in the past. But what other player out there that we see coming up in college football, or that we there's Lamar Jackson, as you said, a unicorn. He's a
yes.
unique individual. So I don't think he can change the game just by being who he is. I don't think we're going to see this, you know, more in the NFL as we go down the road.
I think he's a generational level unique talent. That's why I call him a unicorn. I mean, I think the best analogy to Lamar Jackson is Michael Vick. And that means that every 15 or 20 years, you might get a player who's capable of having this level of success at the quarterback position, right? I mean, I think that's true. And look, it's hard to find successful quarterbacks regardless of what kind of style quarterback they are. There aren't a lot of Patrick Mahomes growing on trees. There certainly aren't a lot of Brady's and Manning's growing on trees either. It's just super hard to find guys in general who can be successful in the NFL. And I think a lot of times you're right, Eddie, that we think, oh, this works for this guy, and so we're going to be able to plug and play with somebody else and it's going to be just as successful. I think that underrates the talent, which is why I'm saying the unicorn aspect to it. There aren't very many Lamar Jacksons. And I think that is going to be a huge and fun debate, frankly, over the next year, maybe the next 2 years, off and on. What is the sustainability of this level of dominance? And look, there are, as we just ran through the NFL MVPs, a lot of guys who blipped up and had incredible years. Boomer Esiason, Cam Newton, Rich Gannon, and won MVPs, but how sustainable was that over the length of their career as it pertains to, you know, Brett Favre won 3, Aaron Rodgers won 2, Peyton Manning has won 5, Tom Brady has won 3, that sustained level of dominance that is going to lead to consistent Super Bowl contention? I think that's a really interesting question going forward with Lamar Jackson. We're going to be joined by Chris Mannix, by the way, in a moment. I'll ask him that question about the Steph Curry effect on the NBA and whether he buys into the idea that Lamar Jackson could have a similar game-changing power in the NFL as Steph did in the NBA.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let me go ahead and bring in Chris Mannix. He joins us here on Friday. Chris, we've been debating this throughout the show, and I'm curious what you think. I know you're an NBA guy and boxing and everything else, but Lamar Jackson, 5 touchdown passes last night. Ravens close to locking up the number one overall seed. We're trying to discuss, is he like Steph Curry in that Steph Curry fundamentally changed the game in the NBA, and his lasting legacy is going to be substantial for that reason? Or is he more like other quarterbacks who have come in and been successful, but the NFL just kind of ends up doing what the NFL does, which is adjust and fit talents and everything else? But I want to start with that question for you. Do you buy into the idea that Steph Curry is the most transformative and impactful player of his generation based on the way he changed the way the game was played in the NBA?
You know, I mean, it's almost two questions, right? Like,
yeah.
Is he the most transformative? I know, because I still think, you know, you look through the eras. I mean, what Bird did, what really Magic did as a 6'9 point guard was transformative. Jordan, everything he did, and LeBron. I mean, LeBron, I think he's in the mix as transformative. Comparing Lamar Jackson and Curry is all going to depend on if Lamar Jackson yields this new bumper crop of players that play like him. Because,
yeah.
I mean, Trae Young is the first player of the Steph Curry generation. The kids that grew up playing like Steph Curry and wind up playing at the highest level like Steph Curry. If in the next 20 years we see 3, 4, 5 quarterbacks in the NFL with a Lamar Jackson-like style, I think the answer will be yes. I just don't think we know or can say with any kind of definitiveness yet, because you just haven't seen that group of, you know, 10, 11-year-olds who are out there running around like crazy and having the dual threat.
Analogy that I make about Steph Curry is I coach Little League basketball. I coach my kids. Mm-hmm. Every kid wants to be Steph Curry, right?
Yeah.
They all try to shoot the ball from too far away. They all, like, I have to tell my kid, like, you can't fall after you shoot a 3-point shot, right? Like, because Steph Curry falls down so often. They've watched him on YouTube. I'm like, that's not a good thing, right? Like, keep your feet. But they all want to be Steph. They don't want to be LeBron. And I think it's because Steph's talents are accessible. 99.9% of people, 999, you can probably continue, are not going to ever have LeBron James' physical gifts. So, you know, kids didn't want to grow up being Patrick Ewing because they're like, I'm not going to be 7 feet tall, right? Like, he's an incredible player back in the day of the Jordan era. They wanted to be Jordan because Jordan seemed accessible. They want to be Steph because Steph seems accessible. And so I'm fascinated by the way, like, LeBron is the better player. LeBron is clearly the more transcendent talent, but Steph can be the more transformative to the game because more people want to be Steph and can be Steph than could be LeBron. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. I think one area, too, that in a way it's a negative for Steph Curry is that being Steph Curry or trying to be Steph Curry doesn't often yield the most positive results. I mean,
yes.
as a guy coaching young kids, I mean, you can understand that kids pulling up 26 feet.
Awful decision.
You know,
yes.
It's not a good thing.
Yes. No, I have to say all the time to them, you aren't Steph Curry. And that is one thing about Steph's game is everybody can shoot from long range, and so he seduces a lot of basketball players, and I think it happens at the college level, where in the NCAA tournament now, everybody pulls up from 28 feet to try to win the game instead of try to take the ball to the basket. Well, most people are not Steph Curry. He seduces people into believing they can do what he does because he does the very difficult so effortlessly, which is what often happens with people of great talent, regardless of the field. All right, so that's
what sometimes I can't tell with college basketball either because it's so bad. Like,
yeah.
College basketball in general is just bad basketball to watch on a regular basis.
We're talking to Chris Mannix. Okay, now let's pivot over. You were in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, I believe it was, for the fight.
Yeah.
And this fight, I feel like, would have gotten so much more attention if it happened like basically any other time than when it did happen, during the middle of the college football games on Saturday from Saudi Arabia in the middle of the afternoon. I would have 100% paid attention to Ruiz Joshua if it were happening at a different time in the year. what happened out there? I feel like a lot of sports fans still didn't see it. What did we learn, if anything, and what is now the table been set for based on what you saw in Saudi Arabia?
Well, I think we learned that Andy Ruiz is Buster Douglas 2.0.
Yeah.
He came into the fight 15-plus pounds overweight and, you know, admitted afterwards he didn't prepare, he didn't work hard, he didn't train hard. I mean, all the things you were worried about, Andy Ruiz fell into those traps. Joshua took some criticism for not going out there and blasting Ruiz out in the same way that Lennox Lewis knocked out Haseem Rahman or Vladimir Klitschko knocked out Lehman Brewster in their rematch. But, look, he fought a guy that 6 months earlier beat the crap out of him, and he was able to box circles around him for 12 rounds. So I don't necessarily blame him for that. What it does, Clay, is kind of put us right back to where we started 6 months ago with Joshua, you know, at the top or in the mix for the top heavyweight in the world, and all of us out there clamoring for that big matchup. Deontay Wilder, if he can beat Tyson Fury in his rematch versus Anthony Joshua. And once again, we're never going to get it because this is boxing. Boxing is stupid, and everyone tries to squeeze out the last nickel out of every single fight, and we wind up missing out on the top fights we could possibly get.
So you don't think we'll ever see that fight?
I think we'll see it, and both these guys will be like in the case of Joshua, his mid-30s, in the case of Wilder, like 40. And it's just going to drive us crazy in the same way that Pacquiao Mayweather did.
That's really frustrating, isn't it? I mean, going all the way back to when Holyfield and Tyson couldn't get in the ring in their prime, it seems like boxing has this problem a lot where everybody wants to see a fight and it would be a huge deal and they just can't get it done.
The worst thing that happened to boxing in the last 20 years was the fact that Mayweather and Pacquiao was this enormous commercial success, because now every boxing manager who doesn't want to put his fighter in tough can say, look at that fight. Look, you just make it wait, you deal with the criticism, and it's the biggest fight in boxing history. I mean, look, Deontay Wilder has the same manager as Floyd Mayweather, Al Haymon. And I guarantee you that Deontay Wilder, who turned down $40 million earlier this year, actually $80 million for two fights against Anthony Joshua, is being told the exact same thing. Kick the can down the road, the fight will be bigger, even though it won't be anywhere near as consequential.
What can you tell me? We're talking to Chris Mannix as we head out with you here. What can you tell me about the first 25 games of the NBA season? Like if people right now, because I think a lot of my audience is all in on the NFL, they're all in on college football, and they don't really pay attention to the NBA. The two or three things that are most consequential that have happened in the first 25 games of the NBA season are what?
I think it's the buying into the Lakers. No question. I mean, I was a skeptic of the Lakers coming into this season because they were once again putting a team together on the fly, but watching LeBron play both ends of the floor and watching that defense, which is a top five defense, and I think only going to get better as the season progresses, yeah, they're the real deal. And look, we said coming into this season that there was likely going to be almost unprecedented parity, NFL-style parity, and that's kind of, you know, loomed large and become true over the course of the season. You've got probably six or seven teams that wake up right now and say, I am a legitimate championship contender. And I think that makes the NBA a lot more fun. I mean, you know, the last 10 years, 20 years really, it's been one super team after another. The Heat gave way to, you know, the Golden State Warriors with the Cavaliers kind of mixed in. Both conferences, it feels like with one tweak or one injury here or there, you can come out of it and you can win. And look, Adam Silver's taking a beating for the ratings. I understand that's a longer conversation, but you know, give me this type of parity for the NBA over anything we've seen over the last 20 years. Ratings be damned. I mean, they're finally going to get a playoffs where it seems like it can be anyone that comes out of it.
Outstanding stuff as always. Chris Mannix at SI Chris Mannix. We'll talk to you next week.
You got it, Clay.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.